Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
For many of us, our daydreams about the future are bound up with smart machines, whether robots to clean our houses or spaceships to drop us off on faraway planets. And while we may not be jetting off to work in our flying cars anytime soon, we do live in a world of great technological advance. Just 15 years ago, in 1999, Google's annual revenues were $220,000. In 2012, they were $50 billion. But is there a trade-off to all this technological success? In his book Mindless, Why Smarter Machines Are Making Dumber Humans, Simon Head looks at the darker side of our IT-intensive world. Simon Head is a senior fellow at the Institute for Public Knowledge at New York University and senior member at St. Anthony's College at Oxford University. And it's a great pleasure to welcome him to our program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to be with you.
What brought you to this subject of looking at this, ultimately the smart machines and what impact they have on us?
I actually became interested in this subject quite a long time ago in the early 90s when I'm British. I divide my time between the UK and the US, and I was interested in the manufacturing systems coming into the UK and indeed to the United States from Japan. And these were billed as being extremely employee-friendly, as requiring very high levels of skill and knowledge on the part of the workforce, which of course is desirable because it increases their earning power. And so I actually went and looked at some of these systems, companies like Toyota and Nissan, and I actually found something very different, that these systems were extremely disciplined and rigorous, that they really were a modern version of what's known as scientific management or Taylorism, which originates in the United States at the beginning of the 20th century, and which the Japanese had taken hold of and improved and made much more rigorous. And so there was a very dramatic contrast between the reality of these systems and their impact on the workforce and what their impact was thought to be in the sort of broader academic, political community. And that's really the origins of my interest in these systems. And I think that the situation we have today is that there's been a massive transfer of these control systems, of these corporate operating systems, from the manufacturing economy to the service economy, to the white-collar economy. And the American economy is now overwhelmingly a white-collar economy. And so what I've done is to look at how these systems work really in a non-manufacturing service context. And we find that there is a very, very rigorous regime of control, which I think has a negative effect on a large proportion of the workforce.
Specifically, you focus on computer business systems, CBSs, right, as you call in the
right
book. These, you say, are little known and little understood management systems, but they rely on networks of computers joined by software systems and the internet, and ultimately have the power to manage the affairs of these giant global corporations, but to your point a moment ago, but also to ultimately micromanage the work that is being done.
That's right. I mean, in the opening passage of the book, I liken these systems to what black holes were when the scientists knew there were things out in the universe which were immensely powerful and exerting a gigantic gravitational pull, but they really didn't know what they were. And as far as the sort of broader civic society is concerned, I think that these computer business systems are rather like that. They are immensely important and immensely powerful, and yet they're not at all well known outside the specialist communities which create them and market them, and they're marketed and created by companies, leading IT companies such as IBM, Oracle, and the German corporation SAP, which is actually the world leader. But the nature of these systems is not well understood, and I'm really trying to describe what they're like in the book. And what I would also say, which is extremely important, is that if you look at the technologies and their data storage technologies, they are database technologies, they are control and monitoring systems, there's a wide range of different methods of operation for them. They don't necessarily have to be kind of industrial systems. But what I'm arguing is that in actual fact, if you look at the way they're used, particularly in an American business context, they tend to take on this industrial form. And that means that the control regime for employees tends to be rather severe and rigorous. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. That's a very important point.
Interestingly enough, you make the point in the book that these systems, these CBSs, are actually not new. They have some links to the 20th century and have been around a while and adapted to where we are today.
Well, I think that's a crucial point, and it's been one of the central assumptions of my research, really for over 20 years, because I wrote a previous book on this subject. And in that book, I traced the descent of these systems from manufacturing systems. And I looked at the tradition of mass production in American business history, the methods of Ford and Taylor, Frederick Winslow Taylor and scientific management. I looked at their role in the Second World War when they created the great arsenal of democracy, which contributed to the victory over the Nazis. I looked at the way in which the Japanese had revamped these systems, which I've already talked about, and then I looked at the transfer of these methods, which really are methods of mass production, from the manufacturing to the service economy, which took place in a big way in the late 80s and early 90s under the rubric of what's called business process reengineering. So all kinds of processes in areas like customer relations management and human resource management begin to be subject to these industrial disciplines. But in the book I've just written, Mindless, I also trace the descent of these systems from the military systems, which originated in the Second World War and in the Cold War. And the influence of computers, computerization, really begins in a big way in the 1950s with, for example, the development of the gigantic defense systems against Soviet bombers initially and then against Soviet missiles, the NORAD systems. And that's where you really have the use of computers in management systems on a gigantic scale. And what you have at the beginning of the 1960s is the transfer of these technologies from the military to the civilian sector. And the first big system was called Sabre, and it was the system developed by IBM for American Airlines to automate airline reservation systems on a continental basis. And it's a hugely important event in the history of technology and the history of systems. And this particular descent, this ancestry, is not at all well understood. So if the book does have an original angle to it, I think it's this, the crucial role played by these military systems.
And because of that, and because of that role, we are talking about computer business systems, but this is very much a party that very, very few of us are invited to. These are corporations and consultants and management theorists who sustain these systems. And are we just not invited? Is it secretive, or are we just ignoring it?
Well, I think that's an extremely important point, because one of the things I say in the opening chapter of the book is, if you look at the history of the politics of industrialism, if you like, really beginning in the mid-19th century, there was a great awareness of what was going on in the factories. If you look at the reform movement in England, and of course England was the first country to industrialize in the Industrial Revolution. Under the English Factory Act, the inspectors were going into the factories, really from the 1830s onwards, and they described in great detail what was going on, and some of the things going on there were harrowing. And of course, one of the people who picked up on that was Marx. If you read the chapter in Das Kapital, which deals with Victorian industrialism, his main source is actually the reports of the factory inspectors. If you go on to the end of the 19th century to the United States, the social gospel movement, which was very much religious-based, was nonetheless a movement for the reform of the factories and of the living conditions of workers. And that, too, was based on very early social science investigations of what was going on in the factories. And if you go forward in time to the 20th century, you have Charlie Chaplin's film Modern Times, which showed what the assembly line was like, and you have a book like the book The Machine That Changed the World on the Japanese production methods, which is extremely influential. So we have a kind of idea of what the systems of the first machine age looked like, but the problem with these systems is that we really don't, because they're hidden. They're software systems and hardware systems, and so there's a very sort of fuzzy awareness in the broader civic society as to what these systems are like. And I think that is quite dangerous, because these technologies are extremely dynamic, and I think that they're outrunning the ability of the broader political civic society to understand what they are. And I think that's a dangerous situation.
The subtitle of the book is Why Smarter Machines Are Making Dumber Humans. So as we wrap up, talk a little bit about the impact of what effect this is having on us and how we get out of that dumb phenomenon.
Well, I think there are two aspects to this. One is the extent to which work can be monitored and be subject to surveillance. And, of course, we're deeply aware of this issue because of the Snowden scandal and the evidence of what the NSA is up to in monitoring phone calls of apparently a great chunk of the American population. But the monitoring and surveillance which goes on with these systems, whether you're talking about what goes on at an Amazon so-called fulfillment center, in a call center, in an area like human resource management, or even in healthcare, where the doctors working for HMOs, for example, their work is extremely rigorously monitored. And I think that this monitoring can be pushed too far and can be become a violation of people's human rights, just as what the NSA is potentially up to is a violation of human rights. There's the aspect of monitoring, but there's also an aspect which goes further than that, which is the aspect of really deciding in detail how the work should be done. And one of the technologies which does that are so-called expert systems. And what expert systems are doing is to say, you find out from the client in the call center in human resource management what his problem is, and then you rely on the expert system embedded within the computer to come up with the answer. Well, the research I've done on this suggests that human life is too complex and too unpredictable to do that, that even quite simple transactions like what goes on in a call center customer service is actually very complicated when you think of the psychological complexity of the interaction between agents and customers, and that actually you get very bad customer service when you rely on these automated systems. So dumbing down means both subjecting employees to really intrusive and rather demeaning monitoring, but also not allowing employees, whether they're doctors or call center agents, to use their own skill and human intuition to deal with their fellow human beings.
The name of the book is Mindless, Why Smarter Machines Are Making Dumber Humans. It is published by Basic Books. Simon Head, a delight to have you with us and to share your expertise. I thank you very much.
Great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Mindless. It is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.